Welcome back to Boiler Up Down South. This is Drew coming live from kind of gray Athens, Georgia today. It's a little on the sort of wintry side of fall. I'm here with my buddy Garrett, who is still recovering from whatever crunch he brought home last week, but sounding a little bit better. Feeling a little bit better today, Garrett?
Garrett, I haven't heard that name in years.
No, hopefully my voice sounds more like myself. But, it's a little raspy. It's a little 1950s broadcaster who smokes cigarettes on air. I'm hanging in there.
Well, Garrett, we have a celebration today because we actually won a football game.
And we had 600 and more than 600 yards of total offense.
Ooh.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah, that's sort of what we've been looking for all season.
And we will further gloat about how we have kind of pointed out what Purdue can do to succeed offensively. and that they did exactly some of those things. So, stay with us. We'll get back to you after we pay some bills, and sorry that I still sound like a frog.
All right, Garrett the Frog. Let's talk about the offense, because that was the best offensive performance of the season, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, first time since last season that Purdue got 600 or more total yards of offense, and looked pretty good, just spreading the ball all over. And first, I want to give a shout out to another Garrett Miller, who led the team in receiving with six receptions, 65 yards. And I was hanging my head and sighing deeply when I thought he was injured again. But this dude he just keeps getting knocked down. Like, he is a Chumbawamba song in real life. He gets knocked down and he gets up again. Find me another person from 1995 who can make that reference off the cusp.
Garrett, real quick, you feel like Garrett Miller might lead the nation in, like, injuries per catch?
Honestly, yeah, dude. And he just, like, he gets up and there's, like, a cut. And there was that one, when we were watching last week, Drew told me to look away because he was like, oh, I think he might have gotten a fracture in his leg. And then we both quickly realized, wait, no, he just got a cleat to his shin and he's bleeding and that's why there's a towel over it. Like, this dude is tough as nails.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And so, you know, I'm a big tight end advocate. Garrett Miller obviously, you know, was supposed to be a big facet of the offense this year. And he just, you know, Chumbawambas, man. He gets knocked down and he gets up again. He ain't ever going to keep him down.
Yeah, he big day for Mr. Miller. Looks like he came through, six receptions, 65 yards, a touchdown. Some of those six were, you know, receptions over the middle, keeping the drives moving. Kind of that's what we've been expecting from him all year. And it just took him a while to get going. You know, he missed the first part of the season coming back from that knee injury. And then that first game back, I think it was Syracuse, he went up for a pass, and we said had to look away because, like, one of his fingers was pointed at a right angle.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was just, yeah, sort of the start of it. So, a nice game for Miller. I kind of felt like when we started the preseason, we thought Garrett Miller had a chance to be, you know, an All-Big Ten, or at least on one of the All-Big Ten teams. And I kind of feel like what we saw against Minnesota was sort of what we were hoping for all season. So, a couple games left. Let's hope he finishes strong. Who else impressed you, Garrett, or what else? Who or what else, I guess?
Well, I mean, offensively, I think you and I probably both want to talk about Tracy. I mean, the guy's a converted receiver, and you saw the big bomb he caught over the middle. And I said a couple times this week in different articles and on the previous podcast when I was getting over my cold and sounded like Kermit the Frog, I was like, hey, I mean, Minnesota's secondary, like, has kind of done what they've needed to do, but we can see that they can be easily beat over the top, like, straight down the middle of the field, and that's how they lost to Illinois. And, you know, Tracy, the converted wide receiver, got kind of sent down the middle and just split out and got separation and beat him over the top and quick touchdown. And I think that was the drive where he had like all of the yards on that drive, and it was like a 3-play drive. Like, so obviously Tracy's up there. Maccabee, oh, crazy legs.
Just the whole running game in general. That was Purdue put out. It looked like that was the best team running game since, like, I think I said 2003. I'll have to go back and check. But it's been a long time since Purdue's run the ball that well. Maccabee was just eating up yards. He was running like a man possessed, covering the ball up in traffic. I don't even know. Which was your favorite of his angry runs, Garrett?
I mean, anytime I see him, like, just split wide, miss one tackle to the outside, and then scamper down the sideline for a good, like, 10 to 15 more yards, like, those are my favorite type of plays that he's capable of. But, dude, some of the ones where he was just... It just seemed to get better and better and better. It was like, oh, that was his best run since a few games ago. And then it was like, oh, that was his best run since a play ago. And then it was, oh, that was his best run since a play ago. He had probably his game of the season. Hopefully he has more of those, but, like, so far, certainly his game of the season.
How about that offensive line really paving the way? I feel like, I thought the play calling was good. I think relying on that run game a little bit more than normal. Purdue ran the ball 44 times for 353 yards and threw the ball 25 times. So, you know, that's not maybe the ratio you would normally expect from a Purdue team, but I felt like with the offensive line currently as constituted, with Josh Kaltenberger came in, that would be the backup center. I think he played, was he playing left or right tackle? He may have been playing left tackle, and I don't think he'd ever played that position before in his life. And running the ball was imperative, because it's always easier for those guys to run block than pass block. And I felt like they were able to really get a nice sort of rhythm with the offensive line, and there were some good creases, and they were finishing off runs well. And, it's been a tough year for those guys, but I feel like they were able to really get out there and kind of win the game for Purdue on Saturday. I also feel like that really kind of speaks to the guys' buy-in for this program, because Purdue came out and out-hustled Minnesota. I feel like they played harder than Minnesota did, even though they only have, you know, two wins and aren't playing for anything. What's your thought on that?
I mean, what I was so impressed with was really just, like, the variation in the play calling, to where it was just constantly keeping a Minnesota defense that hasn't really played too many, like, the offenses that Minnesota's defense has faced haven't been very good, and are all kind of set in their own ways. Like, they're all very either run heavy or very pass heavy, so you know what you're preparing for with a week's preparation, you know? And I feel like this was the first really variable offense that Minnesota was going to have to face this year, and so I was really hoping that the Graham Harrell play calling was just going to be kind of your guess as good as mine if you're a defense trying to prepare for that and lining up against it. And it was very unpredictable, and they didn't just heavily rely on one single outside run sort of scheme, or, you know, really try to establish. They were all complementary of each other, like the passes over the middle, passes to the sideline, trying to beat them over the top into the end zone, like we saw with the Burks touchdown, the Tyrone Tracy touchdown. It kept him on her toes, and that's exactly what I've been wanting to see all year.
Yeah, and also I feel like Hudson Card, we've talked about everybody else. We obviously have to talk about the quarterback. That was, I'd say, his best game, most efficient game for sure. 17-25, so he was completed 68% of his passes, 250 yards. So that's, 10 yards per completion. That's great. Adjusted yards per attempt. So he's averaging, like, you know, 12.4 yards an attempt. Three touchdowns. QB rating 191.9, or that's the rating that Sports Reference gave has for the game. So pretty good. That's a good day. The rushing yards, I feel like, especially, he was better on Saturday of being decisive in the run game. And when it wasn't there, instead of trying to make a heroic play in the pocket and complete a pass that maybe he shouldn't even attempt, he was tucking the ball and just going forward and getting what he could get.
Well, yeah, because when you can establish the run game, I mean, you're not so much having to even think about playing hero ball, right?
Like, yeah.
And, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to find too many teams who rush for 350 yards in a game and lose. So, like, when your offensive line looks that good and it's paving the way on both interior and like, toss sweeps around the side and stuff like that, I mean, that's a hard team to beat, and they're going to be able to get their yards as they want and use the clock as they want. And that's kind of the Purdue offense I thought we were going to get for the majority of the year. But, you know, first year new staff, I knew they'd find their footing eventually. It's just like, that's the Purdue offense I kind of thought they could be, and it was really refreshing to see that.
They just kept pouring on the points, man. I hope they save some for the next 2 weeks, because Purdue is just going to be a really sort of interesting team in these next 2 weeks, obviously, to sort of look ahead to the future, as well as obviously prioritizing winning. But I see just a good potential on the offense. Obviously, having Card build some momentum going into camp would be great for his confidence. Really maybe try to establish himself as the guy, I would say, going into this game. I think Purdue would have been negligent if they didn't bring in somebody that could compete with him right away in this offseason. But if he can maybe show in the next couple games, with maybe a more run-heavy game plan, what he can look like, maybe that changes, and he sort of goes into the offseason as the number one quarterback. Saturday certainly went. It was a good start. Let's see if he can do it again. I think they make an excellent point, though, that because they were able to run the ball so much, I don't feel like Card maybe thought he had to, although I tell you what, that one touchdown he gunned in, I was a good throw, but I don't know if I want him to make it again.
He's capable of playing hero ball, but I think he tries to do it too much out of
feeling like somebody needs to do something, because the ball's not moving, so I need to do something to make it move.
It's not like an ego hero ball thing. It's like he feels it's necessary hero ball,
right? Like something needs to happen, and I'm the one with the ball in my hands, and nobody else is making a play, so I gotta force something. And I think you're right. When the ball's moving, on the ground as well as it was,
he doesn't think about it.
And his receivers are catching the ball, which has been a huge problem the prior 2 weeks, or just been drops really plaguing the whole team. And I felt like that looked better. I guess the weather was a little nicer. It wasn't quite as chilly. But I thought that looked a lot better as well, and that helped Card out, where he was rewarded for making the right decision instead of being punished for making the right decision because the receiver drops the ball. Great game. Card, offensive line, the running backs, Garrett Miller, tight end, came into play. And then it was just sort of spread across the receiving group.
Yeah, three guys each with one reception touchdown.
Yeah, Deion Burks, he had the a long game, but four receptions, 60 yards. So didn't catch a lot of balls, but when he did, they went a long way, and a touchdown. Sawinski has come in. I guess he's one of Hudson Card's boys, and he's sort of come in and become a reliable target for Purdue off the bench as a wide receiver. I think he and Hart have a little bit of a good rapport, and so he's coming in and playing well. And, you know, we've seen that in Sawinski's career. It's kind of weird. Every time he gets on the field, he seems like he's pretty steady. But he doesn't always get on the field. And maybe even behind some players that don't quite produce as well as he does. And then, you know, Jaden Dixon-Veal had a couple of receptions. He's been sort of a peripheral guy in the offense. And TJ Sheffield only had one catch, but it was a big one. Was a really nice 24-yard touchdown catch. So, like you said, that's sort of what we were hoping for.
Yeah, spreading the ball around, man.
And from at multiple positions attacking, you get the running backs attack in out in the pattern, catching balls and also running. You get the tight ends and then the wide receivers. So everything's sort of spread out. It's much, much harder to defend because there's no real number one player out there. I feel like a little bit that's how Deion Burks kind of shook free. You know, I feel like they weren't able to maybe target him as the number one receiver. Like, he's sort of been targeted here recently and had a hard time getting off that sort of coverage. So I feel like he had a little more space out there because Purdue was throwing to other guys as well. As good as the offense was, I felt like the defense hung in there. Wasn't their best effort.
But I mean, like, at one point, Purdue was up, like, 42-20, so...
It's true. You know, that's true.
I can kind of understand not necessarily throwing in the towel, but, you know, lightening up a little bit. We've all seen football teams that we like... when things are a little less stressful, they put in a little less effort. It happens.
It happens. It does. It does. And, you know, maybe playing a little less aggressive, trying to make Minnesota score by using some clock there in the fourth quarter. I could definitely see some of these stats being more empty stats than not. You know, but 407 total yards, that's a little more than we're accustomed to. They tried to get their run game going, and I mentioned this in my sort of previews, that Minnesota wants to run the ball until you stop them from running the ball. And I felt like Purdue did enough in the run game, especially early, and the offense, Purdue's offense was scoring points, that Minnesota couldn't really stick to the run as like they wanted. And even though Ethan, oh my gosh, Garrett, give me the name. I heard Bryson.
Kalikmanis,
yeah. Even though he had a decent game in terms of, you know, he threw for 292 yards and three touchdowns, he only completed 18 of 42 attempts. So Minnesota is a team that, like, in a lot of their wins, are teams that, like, grind you down with just this power run game and their giant offensive linemen. And they couldn't do that because Purdue held up well enough in the front seven to start the game. And then, again, the offense helped out and kept scoring. So it sort of forced Minnesota to attempt 42 passes, which is great. That's exactly what you want to do if you're playing Minnesota, is make them throw the ball. Because, again, they're just not super efficient at it. Any players stand out on the defense? Obviously,
Jordan had a great game. I can't. I don't think either of us can say enough good things about how he's been and how he's even gotten better across the course of the season. Like,
he commands so much attention out there, even when he's not making the play himself.
Even if he's not, like, the guy who's supposed to be the main point of attack, he's taking up two offensive linemen's attention at once, at the very least, and it's been great to see what Scorton can do.
He had an all around game, three tackles, a tackle for loss, a sack, and a pass defense. So that's, you know, he was all over the place on that defensive line, really giving Minnesota some trouble. And then, of course, Kydren Jenkins, another great game. The two outside linebackers. Man, I'll tell you what, this is going to be an easy defense to recruit off of outside linebackers, pass rushers,
yeah,
too.
It's like, look how successful you can be in this scheme that we run at the front.
I know Purdue has a decommit from, I think, not this year's class, but next year's class from an outside linebacker, I think last week. I'm not even worried about that because they got a lot to sell to outside linebackers in these upcoming recruiting classes, as well as Jenkins and Skorton have played this year. Obviously, Skorton is coming back next year. Everybody get their checkbooks out. We got to get that NIL NIL money together. I don't know. We got to call in the Bechtels, I think. I don't know if they have any money. Somebody.
If anybody knows anybody who owns a train company,
something. We need Nick Skorton to get paid, because somebody's gonna look at that monster and say, "Man, I think he looks like he's perfect for a top tier SEC defense."
Yeah, his production this year has been insane, and I really hope he's back at Purdue for one more year.
Yeah, because, man, I could see somebody throwing a nice bag at him. And, you know, Jenkins, I hope Jenkins, I mean, man, he could come back. Jenkins could return as well. I think he has his COVID year. I don't know if he'd take it or not. He's played a lot in his career, and he's hot right now. I don't know if he staying another year gets him any hotter, but you know, outside linebacker is gonna be a premium position on this defense, I think, coming up in the years to come, and that's gonna bring in some more talent. I think we used to be the den of defensive ends. It may be the think of a word that starts with O.
Orange.
The orange of outside linebackers? No.
I don't know, dude. You said a word that starts with O.
That's true. That does start with O.
You didn't specify.
It's a word that starts with O that means a group.
Ostensible group of homies? I don't know.
I don't know. Okay, that's it. Ostensible group of homies, Dan, of offensive linebackers.
Like, you just see a group of random guys, like, talking to each other about, like, hey, remember Rod Woodson, who played for Purdue? And then, like, they're just all of a sudden being like, hey, you remember when Randy Johnson played for the Mariners? That's an ostensible group of homies. So,
I can see that. Okay. They
you like that Rod Woodson reference, everybody?
Yeah. That was. And, hey, then Garrett had that one tucked way in there because he is recent to the Purdue cult. Kudos for the research.
Hey, I'm happy to be in this cult, man. I will drink this golden black Kool-Aid.
You know, I will say this, Garrett. It's probably easier to be a Purdue fan if you're also a Georgia fan. Because
I'll say it's easy to be a fan of anything if you're a Georgia fan. Come right down here, drink some of my poison sweet tea, and we'll talk about our Lord and Savior Kirby Smart. I love football. I just happened to go to UGA. I did grow up a Georgia fan. I happened to go to UGA. It's been very fun to learn about Purdue because I did grow up loving Drew Brees, you know, and Jim Everett, and I'm a big quarterback fan. That's the only position I was good at football until kids hit puberty before I did and they started taking my head off. So, like, that whole Jim Chaney basketball on grass era, Kyle Orton, I love that stuff. So it was not hard for me to become a Purdue fan. And I know I'm new to it, and I appreciate you guys hearing me be new to it, but it wasn't exactly difficult. And Hudson Carr's my boy.
Well said, well said. And again, there's three wins in the bag. I think we're going to four. I want to look at something real quick though, because this was something I was sort of thinking about after the game. I want you to listen to this schedule. So pretend like this season hasn't happened yet. How many wins does Purdue get on this schedule? Nebraska. Purdue play Nebraska.
We're talking, like, am I going back to, like, a preview, like, if we're in July?
Yeah. Well, no, we know what we know now. So we know what the Purdue team is now.
Okay, we know what Purdue looks like right now.
Right now. And what these teams look like.
Okay.
So just if Purdue played, say, this schedule instead of the schedule they played. So It opens with Nebraska, so that's a push either way. Eastern Michigan, Purdue wins, right? North Carolina, we'll say that's a loss. Northwestern, win. Louisiana, Sun Belt team, we say that's a win. How many wins?
I'd say so. Yeah.
How many wins are we at right now?
That's four.
Michigan, we'll call a loss. Iowa, we'll call a loss. Michigan State's brutal right now. That's right. So that's a win.
Yeah.
Illinois.
We already beat them.
Yeah. And then so, and that would bring us to Purdue, would be the next team on that schedule.
Well, and that was a spring game, if I recall correctly.
Right. So that was Minnesota's schedule, and I think realistically Purdue has six wins if they weren't sabotaged by the most ridiculously stupid schedule I think I've ever seen a college football program schedule.
I don't know why you start the season with Fresno State, a team that like kind of just ended
the
season.
That was a bye game, Garrett. We paid them $1.3 million. Yep. Why would you ever schedule a team as good as Fresno State has been? Do they not watch football?
Like, okay, it's one thing to pay a team. Like, yes, my alma mater does this a lot. You pay a team to keep their athletic department going, to come and get their butt beat, right?
Right.
And you don't do that with a fringe top 25 team who can embarrass you. You simply don't do that.
And like, there's just...
Why would you do that?
And there's such a there was such a high probability that like these teams were going to at least be decent. In fact, Virginia Tech is significantly worse than I think would have been projected.
All these ACC teams but, as well, yeah.
The Virginia Tech, Syracuse, Fresno State, like, it's ridiculous. I don't know what they were thinking when they scheduled that. I mean, I cover Clemson,
scheduling a
obviously.
MAC team would make more sense. Like, if you scheduled Kent State, if you scheduled, like, I mean, you did schedule Eastern Michigan, but, like, that makes more sense than, you know, like, again, a fringe top 25 team, or even, like, again, Fresno State. I think they ended last year 23, right?
Yeah,
had a lot of their guys come back.
And like, they're traditionally a pretty sound program. Clemson's schedule this year, even though obviously the Tigers have struggled, Duke, and then they play, Charleston Southern, non-major, and then Florida Atlantic, and then they play, Notre Dame as their, like, big non-conference game in South Carolina. So they have, like, two hard non-conference games, and then they schedule two really easy ones. They don't just schedule four, like, teams that might be able to beat them, but maybe, like, that are going to finish, like, 8-4 and are super dangerous. There's no reason for Purdue to play such a difficult schedule.
It's the opposite of low risk, high reward, you know?
Right.
I mean, I know there's a smarter way of phrasing that other than the opposite of what I just said. But, like, it's very low reward, high risk, and I don't know why they would schedule it that way. And hopefully they learn from these missteps because, again, like, not to nitpick, but this Purdue team could have already been bowl eligible by now, given where I see the talent level.
Just given a regular schedule where you say knock off Fresno State, right, and replace them with like Ball State, and there's another win, right?
I wouldn't know anything about playing Ball State,
right? Well, we would have had to outbid Georgia for their services to open the season.
Well, then I wouldn't have gotten to go to the game, dude. Come on, man.
Fair.
Think about Garrett in this situation.
How about it? We schedule Indiana State to start the season.
There you go. The Sycamores. Baby.
So there's a
go
win.
Go dog, Sycamore.
There's a win. So there were four wins. And then we get rid of, say, Syracuse and schedule, like, directional Michigan. And we're five wins and we have Northwestern and Indiana left. And that legitimately is how, like, Purdue should schedule. I mean, that's how other teams schedule. That's how Clemson schedules. That's how Georgia schedules. Like, nobody schedules four teams that can potentially beat you.
Well, also, and, like, I don't want to go too deep into this, like, sounding like I think I'm an expert or anything, but, like, I did work as a recruiting person in the University of Georgia's athletic department, and, like, you don't keep getting, like, highly talented kids interested in you if you're playing teams that, like, are fringe on your level, and then, like, you either beat them by 4 points or you lose to them by 3 points. No, man, what's so much more interesting to these kids, even if you're playing somebody who's just 100% grade A booty, like, if you beat the crap out of them, it's more enthralling than, you know, a close win versus a MAC team, you know?
Yeah, give us a couple of the games. I mean, Purdue play well enough against Fresno State to beat, like, a lot of teams. I think they'd beat a lot. Just, they scored enough points. I think they played well enough. But Fresno State is, like I said, not a bad team. Anyways, I'm getting off track. We're celebrating the Minnesota victory here. I just, at the end of that game, I was just kind of frustrated thinking about how, you know,
we could have hung 49 points on a lot of people this year.
It's just such a weird, like, I think the way people are going to view this season would be totally different if Purdue scheduled just like a normal team. Not like exceptionally easy, not exceptionally hard, just straight down the line like a normal Power 5 team.
Well, and also, as somebody who dabbles around, because I am this much of a nerd, as somebody who dabbles around with, like, athletic director simulator type stuff,
oh my God.
You know what would be great for Purdue to do?
What's that?
When you schedule out-of-conference opponents, make, like, one of the weakest opponents in a big conference.
Oh, that's always,
like,
fun.
I want an annual, because the schools are so similar and they have the same color scheme, I want an annual Purdue-Vanderbilt game.
Oh, that'd be
nice. And then Purdue just, like, throws for 400 yards on Vanderbilt every week. And, hey, you gotta win against an SEC team.
Then we tout our SEC record. We're like, we are 6-0 or we're 3-0 in our last three games against the SEC. And nobody needs to say that it's Vanderbilt.
It just means less.
It just means less. So, anyways, let's go ahead and wrap up our gloating with a little. Give me your player of the game, Garrett. Who you got?
I'm going with Tracy. I gotta go with Tracy. It's hard to not say Maccabee, but you know, Tracy really proved that he can be still his converted position wide receiver and a really darn good running back. So, you know, shout out to him. Shout out to his selflessness in terms of being able to hear, hey, we want you to change positions, and being like, okay, whatever's good for the team. So, got to go with Tyrone Tracy.
I, of course, am going to go with Hudson Card. I'm going to say this. I will say for this game specifically, I agree that Tyrone Tracy, I feel like, was the player of the game. I think long term, that was a really important game for Hudson Card to sort of show what it looks like when he's playing well. Because I feel consistently well in a game, because we haven't seen that too often, and I feel like that long term is something we really needed to see this year. That was that sort of upside. And again, that wasn't against a scrub opponent. And he hasn't played any scrub opponents. So again, his touchdown and interception ratio is going to look worse than it would against any sort of normal schedule.
He took more hits again, and he was still kind of like, I don't know if y'all recall. I said y'all. I don't know if y'all recall in the third quarter, but he got hit in the back, and he was still kind of like walking a little bit weird, and then still threw like an 11-yard strike right on the numbers to, I believe that was Burks. But like, he seemed unfazed even when he was hurting, and he's kind of been hit a little bit all season. So, you know, Hudson Card really did have that game where it was like, dang, if you look like this all the time, you really are the answer.
Right?
Right?
Yeah, that was sort of, again, that was almost like, I think, a proof of concept Hudson Card game where you can say, this is what it looks like when he's playing well and being really efficient, using his legs, and then able to use that. He's got, man, he's such
three touchdown passes, no INTs, one rushing touchdown.
And that arm talent, he can really snap the ball off when he wants to put that extra, the one where he just threw in that such a tight window to the back of the end zone. Man.
No, his touch when he does have time in the pocket, like, and even sometimes when he's rolling out and he's like just throwing off of one leg, like, the touch he has on the ball and, like, the amount of effort it would take you or me to throw a 30-yard pass, like, he just makes it look so effortless to go, like, 40 yards into the back corner of the end zone.
Yeah, no, he really snaps the ball, I feel like. And he has a compact enough delivery. It doesn't take him that long to get it off. I feel like he's got puts a lot of wrist into it almost. He spins it so fast, too. So, and maybe that's one of the reasons we've been having a little hard time catching it when it's cold out. That was another thing that we sort of talked about. Yeah, again, we didn't drop the ball, which was helpful. So, moving on, Northwestern coming up. I think Purdue's probably going to be favored in that one.
I would imagine so, too. I'm not going to make a prediction yet because that's for later on in this week. But, yeah, I don't see that game as too much of a, you know, something Purdue can't win. You know, like, I'm not going to say, like, oh, yeah, it's an automatic win, but, like, that's not a game that Purdue's incapable of winning, so.
Garrett going out on a limb and saying that Purdue's...
That Northwestern can be beaten.
Northwestern is fallible, folks.
Whoa, guys, Northwestern... Well, Northwestern ain't in the CFP rankings, guys.
Okay, so Northwestern is fallible, according to Garrett. That is good to know. I think Purdue...
That is a very hot take. Hey, guys, Northwestern, they can lose a football game.
Just step away from the ledge there, Garrett. We're getting a little crazy on a Sunday. So I think I like Boilers in this one, but again, we'll talk a little bit more about it coming up later on this week. So anyways, hope you all have a good one, and we'll talk to you a little bit about basketball here. Check out us talking about basketball on the feed here in a few minutes.
Yeah, guys, thanks for listening, and I'll just say it, but in a non-Southern accent, y'all come back now, you hear.
Later.